gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of HR Talk. Unfortunately, this week, the face is not available, but we do thank him every week for everything that he does and brings to the table. This week is a very special edition of HR Talk, our introspective series. The series within a series made up of another series begins this week. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm JC, going across the bow all the way to sunny Central Florida. In the land of doom and gloom, Mr. Ricky Baez.
Hello, good morning, good evening to everyone and from wherever they're listening from. What's up there, JC?
Another day in the jungle, man. This is a strong one, Rick. But I did have the opportunity to sit down for just about an hour with an independent musician. Someone that's traveled the world. They were under contract. They did some amazing stuff around the globe. And they agreed to come on HR Talk. And after much back and forth with the lawyers, we do have that signed, sealed, delivered thumbs up to bring the show to the world today.
Roger that, man. These lawyers, they charge a lot of money just for those documents. Holy shit. But
all right. Well, the releases are now in place.
Well, I'm really interested in this one because, yes, this show is about human resources. It's about HR Talk. But I really like the idea of digging in into, what do you call it? Introspective series?
Yes. It's series, within a series.
For series. Seriously.
Made up of a series. Yes. Something along those lines.
Yeah. So, yes, I'm very interested. I read his bio, but I'm not going to say too much about it. I want to listen to it. And then we'll go from there. So go. Shoot.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. JC up in studio. I got Johnny Mazur. John Mazur, the legendary guitarist, traveled all over the world on cruise ships, built his own business from his own personal brand. He's down in the studios today. John, how you doing? John or Johnny? What do you prefer?
Of course. Now, my personal brand.
That's your personal brand, right.
What brand is that?
The Johnny Mazur brand, right? Don't you have your own website and things that are going that are just you?
I do have the website, but as far as things going, I don't think so. I think we're lacking in that department.
Now, wait a minute. You did do a cover not too long ago of a Game of Thrones.
That sounds familiar.
Is that what it was?
I did. But now YouTube is like, you know.
Did they take that down?
No, but they're cracking. I'm reading and seeing other videos of how people can't even play licks on their guitars anymore.
Yeah, no, it's kind of really bad. It shouldn't be that way.
No, it shouldn't. It's bullshit. It's like what was that? Aqualung? Take that down. I think you played Aqualung for a second. And it wasn't even the song, you know.
No, it's okay. I just had to grab my supplies. I left them on the other side of the room
here. Your markers. You left your whiteboard markers.
That's right. Yeah. All right. So if we go back in time a bit, there was a point in time where a young Johnny grew up and decided that he was and he was no longer gonna do whatever he was doing, and he chose to get on a cruise ship and just play guitar. Is that right?
No.
Well, no.
Well,
how did that come to be? How did you get on a cruise ship playing all over the world?
It was just it was the gig. You know, I was looking for gigs, and that one came along, so I took it.
All right. So
it could have been a fucking treehouse. It wouldn't have mattered.
So you've got your brand, your business, you're playing guitar, you're just trying to make some cash, and you answer an ad on Craigslist. You think it's for a bat mitzvah, and next thing you know, you're on a cruise ship.
Something like that. But it was more like, I joined a band when I was 20, and I was playing like in a five-piece band, and then that band split up after a year, and I got a little taste of making some money, you know, playing covers. And so I started another band and did the same thing. And then that one broke up. That one split up. And then I realized that it was the people that was complicating things.
Okay.
So I took it down to a duo. Well, first I took it down to a four-piece. And there were still two people
How many? So there was five. You went from five to four.
Actually, I think there might have been six in the first one. There was
okay.
A girl, I don't make me count.
It's all right.
But it kept getting smaller, you know?
Okay.
And then finally I got down to one. You know,
yeah, you said that we were to four, and that was too many. So you went to the duo.
The duo, and it was always with a girl, and you know how I am with girls. It just doesn't happen. So, I mean, they all eventually get rid of me. So...
too hard on
him. I went to one, and that was a lot of fun. You know, the technology was there.
So you're down to one, meaning you're out of the band, and the band's continuing without you.
Yeah. I just hit play and walk away.
So you were making your own music, though.
I was doing all the sequencing. I was still doing covers, but okay. I was doing all the sequencing myself and just doing the show myself.
Playing all the instruments by your own hand, but pre-recording all that and then just playing that back live and playing with it, though.
Yeah. I wouldn't say pre... It was all MIDI at the time, so...
We're going back.
Yeah, you actually had to play the stuff, and when it plays back like samples and synthesizers. It doesn't play back like pre-recorded music.
Okay, gotcha.
So you got to go get into the computer and sequence the whole thing. First, you got to bust the song, and then you got to bust all the parts. And
that's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is. It is. And that's why I never...
But once it's built, you have a product ready to roll.
Absolutely. I still have sequences. I haven't done this for 10 years, but I still have sequences that I did in the 80s that still, you know, and you can always make them sound better because you just got on off switches,
right?
You know, snare drum on off, you get a better snare drum, you know, you got a new song,
right?
Or a better kick drum, you know, so you can use it for years, and you can always edit it too if you want.
So you start hitting the circuit doing your solo show. What happens?
Well, it was, you know, it wasn't really a show. It was just like a
come on, I'm picturing gig. Pyro and Velcro walls, little people, suits, camels, the whole nine.
Nah, you just set up on the cruise ship was the only one I did.
So you're on the cruise ship by now.
Yeah,
in the story, in the so how did you get on the ship during this plot line?
Well, I was at the very beginning, the first ship I ever did. I there was a book with a bunch of agents in it. It was like a phone book.
Agents. Oh.
Booking agents. So
I'm sorry. I thought you said Asians.
Well, that's the other book.
Okay. But, gotcha.
Yeah. But now you got the internet now, so you don't really need the book anymore. But anyway, so you just I was browsing through there, and there was this one agent that was booking people on ships for Carnival.
Okay.
He turned out to be a real dick. But he said, yeah, I'll book you guys, you know. So,
okay.
So he put us on the ship. And I think the first ship I ever did was like in 88. And then...
Where did you go?
The first ship we did was called Premier Cruise Lines. And it was actually Disney's first ships.
Get out.
They kind of like, what would you call it? Branded themselves to these two ships.
Yeah.
Out of Canaveral. One was called the Oceanic. I can't remember the other one.
Titanic.
We can go with Titanic. So there was this guy, this booking agent, and there was this couple that already did the gig on the ship, but they wanted to take some time off.
Yeah.
So this guy said, you know, they said, can you find somebody to fill in, you know? So he found us. He goes, yeah, we'll try these guys out. So we did the ship the first time, and that was like really, it was hard because the technology was bad.
So you're on ship, you're dealing with the gear that they give you, or you bring your own.
You bring your own.
Okay, you bring your own.
But it was like a drum machine hooked up to a sequencer. There was no real computer involved.
Oh wow.
There were some like. I don't know if you remember the real little floppy disk that you used to put in a Xerox machine.
Yeah, wow, you're going back. Holy smokes, man.
And so I spent most of my time swapping out disks and shit while this other chick was singing.
It's a 36K disk. We could fit half a song on here.
Yeah. And you got to wait for it to load. So I'm like, talk, talk, talk. We got to wait for the song to load. You know, so she's what am I? What do you want me to say? I don't know. Fucking say something, you know? But that was the first one, and then
and this is the full band at that time.
No, it was just me and a
duo,
girl. Me and a girl,
the girl,
yeah. And then,
which I'm sure half the songs were written about anyways.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's how it goes.
That's how this song goes.
So that's a 3 month pump, 6 month pump, whatever it might be.
Yeah, I don't know what that one was. We were filling in, so I don't think it was. I think it was like 2 months.
Okay,
something like that.
But you proved yourself.
Yeah, it does. That's what you would think, you know, but it didn't turn out to be like anything. Like, it turns out that nobody really gives a shit what you do.
So the agent just wanted to plug bodies in, yeah. Get it done, and yeah. Move on.
He wants
get paid.
He wants his money, and he doesn't want you to get fired. That's basically how it goes.
But you're eating for free. You're drinking for free. Yes. You're invoicing the agent. Yes. It's all independent contract. You're not an employee of the agent. The agent's just getting you the job and taking a cut, probably like 50%, 40%, something like that.
Actually, he was taking 10. He was taking 10.
Oh, that's pretty good, John.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad.
That's really good.
Yeah. And I was, when I first did that, I was probably in my 20s or something, and it was a nice way to make a buck. You know, you play your guitar half drunk all the time, and people give you money.
And then you go to sleep in a stateroom with no windows.
Yeah, that's right.
By the boiler.
But you didn't need a window, you know? No. You needed a toilet. That's about it. You know? Sometimes that was a problem.
Really?
Yeah, because they all work on suction, you know. Did you ever go on a ship?
Well, yeah, but a different kind of ship. Tell me about what you're talking about here.
Because the ships are always going up and down, so gravity doesn't really work for you. And plus, a lot of toilets are above the water or below the
water line, right.
You know, so you can't depend on gravity like you do here. So their systems are... all based on vacuum. So there's a little hole in the fucking toilet, and when it opens, when you flush it, it opens, and there's this backwards vacuum pressure that liquefies your shit and puts it through there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. And sometimes it doesn't work. So you can imagine how that can be.
That's rough. That's rough.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not your toilet that doesn't work. Sometimes it's like the 10 toilets down the hall that don't work.
Audience like that one, let me tell you. All right, so you get paid. The agent's taking care of you. You're on the backside of it. You're like, you know what? That wasn't half bad. Let me do it again. Or the call comes and says, you're a rock star.
Nah, that never happened. But you do get hooked on it. It's pretty easy, you know.
How many cruises did you do? This was like a 20-year run?
I did it when I got... My last ship was 2004, so...
Wow.
Or 2005.
Yeah, that's a good run.
Yeah.
88 to 05.
Yeah, but I also was going to Alaska in there. So I would do like 6 months on the ship and 6 months in Alaska.
Because that's normal. That's what most people do. Right?
Well, I don't know what it was, but that's a whole other, you know.
Yeah, no, talk to me about Alaska. How did you wind up there? How did you like... How did you come... Listen, on the HR Talk show not too long ago, we brought up you, and we brought up you playing guitar all over the world and winding up in Alaska and playing for fish or something.
Yeah.
Not the band, but for food.
I kind of remember the podcast, and I believe you said I carried around a suitcase or a box.
Did you?
Or something, and I would just set it up and play my...
Yeah,
it was
it
nice.
Like that?
I liked it, but it was something like that.
Well, what's the reality of Alaska? What happened?
Well, when we were like doing... I was. It was a duo, and it was we were playing in your neck of the woods, actually, Brenton Woods.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, we might have went just over the border. Anyway, it was some hotel. I remember it. It was an older hotel, and it was owned. I can't remember the name of it, but it was owned by this Lebanese guy.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm sure you remember his name.
No, I don't. But anyway, it was up there. You know, like. Yeah. Somewhere between the White Mountains and, you know, the Cog Railway or whatever. I don't know.
Right.
It was up there somewhere. And
the Cog.
And I also remember it was... do you remember the big earthquake during the baseball game?
Yes.
That was going on at the week I was up there. So that's how we can date
that. Holy
smokes. We could date that way. So,
yeah, that was the World Series.
Yeah, it was
right?
In San Francisco.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
I'm sure you felt it up there, though.
Well, yeah, you can, especially up there, because it's really high up and it wobbles. So, anyway, this guy, this Lebanese.
I was late with the late with the sound
effect. We got to get you a pedal. You need a pedal.
I do. I need buttons. Yeah. More buttons.
Yeah. So I remember looking through that book, the same book of agents, and I found this agent out in, I wanted to go west. It was like Oregon or something because I was inspired.
You're an East Coast guy.
Yeah.
But and you've mainly done cruises at this point.
Well, no, this
Caribbean,
is
Mediterranean.
This is actually after my first cruise.
Okay.
This is between. But you did a lot of stuff in between. This was a between when we were up there doing a hotel.
Gotcha.
I mean, we would do that a lot. We would go to, we played at Mount Washington. We actually went to Bermuda played at a restaurant up there for a couple of months. Like between all of this stuff.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Because you just can't stay on there all the time, you know?
But so anyway, you're jet setting. You're flying with your gear.
No, you're driving in a van.
In a van.
Yeah, you had
a van.
Yeah, we drove everywhere.
This is great.
Yeah. Well, we had to fly to Bermuda. They don't have a bridge.
Well, of course. Right. Yeah. No, I gotcha.
Yeah. That I know of, anyway.
Okay, before we continue with Alaska, though, because this is our focus, the Lebanese hotel.
Yeah. I don't know if... Yeah, all right.
It's okay. Just go with it.
I remember big fucking spiders outside that window. But anyway, go ahead.
The band van. Tell me about the band van.
All right. Well, there were several iterations. The first one was a red Chevy. And it was used. I think it was, when I was in the five-piece or the six-piece band.
Yes.
We all bought this van.
So the band chipped in to buy this.
At least a couple people did. I was one of them. I don't think everybody was in on it.
At this point, we're talking serious capital investment from the small business startup.
Yeah, it was at least like $1,500 for this thing.
Man, that's setting you back. Yeah, back in 88, when you consider you bought a Mustang for like, you know, $10,000.
Yeah, well, this first van, I believe, was 85. And it was probably like a 76 van or something.
Ooh, nice. Octagon window in the back.
Yeah. You got it. You know, the plush carpeting that you put in, you know.
And the tables. Don't forget the tables.
Yeah, the tables.
Anyway. Yeah. Enough to fit the people. And all the gear.
Yeah.
And then now you're down to a duo. So you and this woman are traveling in a van.
Yeah. Well,
by the river.
When that band broke up, the woman was in the band and we stuck together and we wound up with the van because nobody wanted to have anything to do with anything anymore.
Just done.
So we're like, they're like, you could take everything. We just want to get out. And I'm like, all right, fine. Who wants to come with me?
So no real paperwork at this point, just handshake agreements, just buy me out or whatever. Goodbye, I'm out, done.
Yeah, I just told them, because I think me and the drummer went and actually took out a loan for this van.
Okay, gotcha.
And we were taking the loan payment right off the top. When the band got paid, we take it right off the top, you know? So when the band stopped... one of the things was, what are we going to do with this van that nobody wants? And I just said, look, I'll take the fucking thing. Don't worry about it. Go home.
Done.
You know?
Because I'm going out west.
Yeah. And they all like, you know, all right, whatever, you know. So anyway, I was looking through the agent book at the Lebanese Hotel. There's this agent out like in, I'm going to say, the Bay Area somewhere.
All right. San Fran.
Yeah. And, we sent him a thing. We just said, hey, you know, what do you got out there? Well, maybe we'll come out there and play. You know?
Yeah.
He's like, come up with a couple of things. So while we were at the Lebanese Hotel.
This is a big deal.
What?
This is an agent in San Francisco. We're talking East Bay, East Bay, or the East Bay. I mean, there's big stuff going through your head at this point.
There's big stuff going through my head. High expectations.
Yes.
The guy turned out to be a cop, and we were like his first band that he ever booked.
Oh, side job. Got it. Yeah, okay. Right.
So, but that's, you know, down the road. We didn't know that at the time.
Okay, right.
But we were thinking like
Yes, we got it. Yeah. We're doing this.
Yeah, so we went out there. Played some gigs. We played in Nevada. We played in like Idaho. We played a bunch of like those casinos that, you know, pop up out of nowhere when you're driving. You know, like, look, there's a casino. You know,
hey, guess what? Johnny's there tonight.
Yeah, you know, with the cowboy guy, you know, and everything. You know,
yeah. So
I think it was called Cactus Pete's or something.
It did. fantastic. Yeah, and then not the hot sauce.
Yeah, all right. It's like nothing but rocks and dirt, and all of a sudden there's a casino, you know. So we were kind of working our way out there, and then we wound up playing around closer to San Francisco, like Sacramento and a couple other places around there. And we liked it out there. So we're like, hey, between gigs, we didn't have anything coming up, but we're like, you know what, let's just get an apartment and stay out here.
Yeah.
So we did.
Great idea.
Yeah. There wasn't enough work out there, though. We were like killing ourselves.
You're
looking
just
for work.
Getting by.
Yeah.
Right.
And this guy, this agent, turned out to be, you know, he couldn't keep us busy enough, you know. So I noticed on one of the gigs, he co-booked it with somebody else.
Okay.
So you're not supposed to do this, but I called the other guy and I said, hey,
we're hungry.
Yeah, we need some work, and this your partner isn't doing it for us. You got anything going on by yourself? And this guy goes, well, you know, a friend of mine just went up to Alaska, and he's running a hotel up there, and he's just asked me if he had anybody. And he goes, I don't know anything about this place. I don't know where it is. I don't know anything about it. If you go, you're going at your own risk.
And at this point, you're thinking to yourself, well, I got to San Fran the same way.
That's exactly right.
Right?
Yeah. So he's like, you're going to have to fly. You're going to have to do all this stuff.
But now in your head, though, like, you're thinking San Fran, L.A., big time, Hollywood. I'm going places. And now I'm going to Alaska.
Well, it was more like, you know, all my dreams got stomped on. Now I'm broke, so I got to go fucking to Alaska to make some fucking money.
So a lot like marriage. Understood. Yeah, it's fine.
Right. So we said, yeah, let's go. You know, so we went up there. Turned out to be Dutch Harbor, you know, where the guys were.
Wait a second. That was the fish guy.
Yeah, dangerous. They're the deadliest catch. That's where they dumped their fish off.
The dangerous, deadliest catch.
Yeah.
It's the sequel. It's even more dangerous than the first.
Yeah. So we went up there, and we actually liked it up there a lot. And it's nuts.
What did you like about it up there? Tell me about it. A lot of people have never been up there.
It's we never heard about it. We didn't know what was going on, you know. So we went up there, and it turns out that the fishermen, when they go out and they fish and they come back to and they wait for their boats to offload, they go into the bars and spend a lot of money, you know. There was only one band. It was us, you know, so they had a good time, you know, and we had a good time playing for them, and they were throwing all kinds of money around.
I mean, you got to figure, they're living on ship.
Yeah.
They're hitting port. They got money to spend.
Yeah.
It's time to spend some cash.
Right, exactly.
And you're the band.
Yeah. We took a lot of shit, though, too, you know.
I mean, that's Alaskan snow crab fisherman area, man. This is kind of a big thing. I remember when I was in the Marine Corps sitting down with my buddy Ricky and Darp and a bunch of other guys I was in the service with, and we're like, man, what should we do after the Corps? What's a really tough job that we could do? And we're flipping through a book, and I think it was an early edition of Maxim within the first season, and they were talking about like some of the deadliest jobs or something like that. Now, I may stand corrected. It may have been in a different magazine, but it talked about being an Alaskan snow crab fisherman.
Yeah.
How much money you could make and how crazy the lifestyle was.
Right.
Those guys partied like rock stars, and
absolutely,
they would go out and make another $200,000-$300,000, come back and do it again next week.
That and the season wasn't that long, so they had to like be up there, and they get out on their boats and they're ready. It's like a race. It's like as soon as the season starts, they're out fishing, you know.
And now you're playing for just the bartender and the waitress.
Yeah, but you know, it's, depending on the ship. Some of these boats are actually processing ships.
Right.
So
it's an all-in-one, all-inclusive.
Right. So actually, what they do is like they're like fish factories, floating fish factories. Right.
Yeah.
So instead of the fishermen offloading their stuff at the factory that's on land, they can also offload it to these companies that have rigs just offshore. Right. And the people that work on these rigs also come into the port, and they do a lot of partying too, because they're They're like, you know,
gutting, now we're talking.
They're like gutting fish all day, so they're ready to like drink some beers.
Time to let loose.
Yeah, exactly.
And now you're a duo. You got this beautiful woman by your side. There's all these guys getting off the boat, all this amazing stuff happening, and you're getting paid tons of cash.
Yeah, money was pretty good.
Or you're getting paid tons of fish.
I did get paid a crab once.
Get out of here.
Actually, I was tipped the crab. This guy was like...
Seriously?
Yeah. He was like... it was King Crab season.
How do you write that down as your invoices, expenses, and income? You know what I mean?
I kind of let that one go. I hope the IRS isn't listening. But anyway, he was waiting for his boat was being offloaded. He didn't get paid.
Yeah.
And he liked the band. He was shit-faced, of course. And he left, and he came back with this king crab. He was holding it by its claw, standing, and he was standing straight up, and the thing was dragging on the ground. It was
oh
so
my
big,
God.
You know. And of course, it was alive because you don't want a dead one because they let out a lot of poison, and then you can't eat it, you know. So when you take the legs off, it has to be alive. So anyway, he puts it in the tip jar, you know, and. And then we had like this little apartment that they give you. That's another nice thing is like they put you up and they feed you. You don't have to. You have no expenses.
You're really a guest at that point.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah. And you're there for like 6 months, so you can really bank it. You know.
Wow.
So like this girl that was working on one of the processing ships. She goes, "Hey, I can help you with that crab. I do that all fucking day."
Really?
You know. So she came over and she's like, she showed us how to like break these legs off so while they're still alive, and we boiled them up, and it was cool. But so we would do that like for 6 months, and then we'd go on the ship for 6 months. We'd be sick of Alaska, you know. We need some modern stuff. I mean, yeah. There was no paved roads up there at the time when we were up there. On this side, it's just an island out in the Aleutians. It's not like you're at the mainland. It's not like Anchorage.
You're out there.
Way out there.
You could see Russia from your porch.
You probably could. You probably could. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
The runway was made in World War II for the airport, and they made it out of metal grates. Because there was there wasn't a piece of land long enough to land these things on. So they put these metal grates down, and then they paved over it. They're still using it out there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. In fact, if you go to YouTube and you Google Dutch Harbor and maybe flight, Dutch Harbor flight, there's all kinds of like videos of people on the plane trying to land because it's such a like... pretty treacherous landing. So there's a lot of videos of that airport and of people landing in the plane over there. But anyway.
Dutch Harbor.
Yeah.
Dutch ovens. Dutch ovens. Were those invented in Dutch Harbor?
They were invented there.
Nice.
They were invented there, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Oh, it's the least I do for America.
Yeah,
Trust me. There was
an Eskimo, and he was trying to cook something, so... He lived in Dutch, so he made this oven out of rocks. I mean, rocks and like seal pelts, I think it was.
Fantastic.
He might have even used a jawbone to light it, you know,
yes,
where you light it. And the Dutch oven was born. So there's a little piece of history there for you. You're not going to find that anywhere.
How long were you in Alaska for?
So I did that. My first time was 1990, and then my last time was 1999. And I would go back and forth.
A decade.
Yeah, I'd go back and forth 6 months there. You know, sometimes I would just take a couple of months off and go back, actually.
Right, right.
But a lot of times I was switching.
But you're not catching like Disney cruise ships out of Port Canaveral or whatever at that point. You're doing West Coast cruises.
No,
at
no.
That point.
Actually, what we would do, because you're there for so long, I'd drive to Seattle and put my car in storage there. Get on a plane, go to Dutch Harbor for 6 months. Come back, get my car, or rent another one. There was a couple times where I would just rent one and just drive the coast because it's just like, yeah, baby.
you're in the midst of, like, the grunge movement
in Seattle at
that time. You're a musician.
Yeah.
How better could this be?
It was really cool. It was cool. So, And then so we
But you're driving from Seattle.
Yeah.
And up to Alaska.
No. We
were in a van. No. By the river.
No, we would drive to Seattle and then fly. It's a long flight. It's like two planes.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of planes.
It's a lot.
It's a lot of planes. And one's big and the other one's little.
What's one of the craziest things that you experienced as an independent contractor pushing through the circuit, let it be up there or anywhere else, or like a journey in the van or anything like that?
Well, there was one gig that we did, another one of those for the same guy, and he's like, well, there's these people up in Valdez. We were playing in Coos Bay, Oregon at the time.
And Valdez. The oil spill guys.
Yeah. Alaska. This is Alaska.
This is during that time.
Well, it was after the fact. But he called and he goes, John, you like Alaska? Like, I do. And he's like, well, there's this one gig up there in Valdez. Again, I don't know anything about it. But you pioneered the other one. Maybe you can pioneer this one.
All right.
So
we heard about your guy at Dutch Harbor.
So he goes, but you can't. They're not going to fly you. They don't have the kind of money that Universal Seafoods, because the Universal Seafoods owned the bar we played in Dutch Harbor.
Gotcha.
So, and these are like, this is just like a bar, and
so that was a big time budget line right there.
Oh yeah, millions of dollars,
unbelievable.
And so, but this one, it was just a bar, and he's like, "Well, what am I supposed to do? Drive all the way up there?" And he's like, "No, they'll pay for the ferry, and it's like a 3-day ferry ride." Yeah, you know. And that sounded like fun, so we did it. We took the ferry up there. We got to the gig, and the accommodations were horrendous.
Come on.
And I said,
shocking.
I said to the, they were nice people. And I said to them, you know, is there anything you can do? There's some nice hotels in town. Maybe you can put us up at a hotel. This place sucks.
So you're like literally on the back side of the bar near the dumpster.
Not too far. It was like a trailer behind, like this trailer park behind the gig.
That's really nice, you know? Actually. That's not bad.
But this particular trailer was a piece of shit.
Not a nice trailer.
No.
Okay.
You know, and so they didn't want to do anything, and they're trying to convince us to stay. She's like, "Well, I was just starting out. I stayed in a lot of places like this." I'm like, "Lady, I'm not just starting out. You know, I don't want to fucking stay here."
Haven't you heard of me? Yeah. Haven't don't you know I'm the king of Dutch Harbor?
Yeah.
Right.
So she wouldn't do it. You know, she didn't have the money, I guess. So she goes, "Well, if you quit, I'm not paying for your ferry home." And this was like November.
Oh my gosh.
So me being the idiot that I am, like, you know what? I'll fucking drive all the way home. So we drove from Valdez, and now you can't drive straight through Alaska to get to Washington. You gotta go.
You can't.
You gotta go through
Canada.
You gotta go through the Canadian Yukon territory. So
very well-paved roads, I'm sure. Well, extremely highly taken care of.
There was one section that was so well-paved that it was covered with ice that you couldn't see. And when my car hit it, it flipped over on its side.
The van?
Yeah.
The van flipped?
Yeah, flipped. And,
oh, my gosh.
And I'm upside down on the L-can wondering what the fuck's going to happen next. So nobody got hurt. And out of nowhere, almost as if somebody pushed my van over, this tow truck comes like a minute later, goes, having some trouble, you know? So,
well, I'm kind of sitting upside down in my van right now. No, it's planned.
And those,
I meant to do this.
And by the way, when you open your door, when your car's upside down, be prepared, because it doesn't work the same way as it does when it's right side up.
What do you mean?
It just kind of flies open. And if you try to close it, it's really heavy.
Got it.
When it comes down.
Noted.
So anyway, they pulled us out and towed us into town, which is like 10 minutes away. And the car wasn't too bad. The rear axle was bent. The side window was blown out. The doors all opened. There was one lock that was destroyed, but you could still close the door.
What about your guitar?
All the equipment was intact.
Beautiful.
All the equipment was intact. So we go into this town. It's called Fort Nelson. I believe it was in British Columbia.
Okay.
And we pull into town while the car's getting fixed. And while I'm at the shop, the girl in the band goes, I found us a place to stay. And I'm like, oh, great. Where is it? She goes, it's right over there. They're going to pay us $900 if we...
If we play?
If we play.
Come on. So, and how much did it cost to fix the van?
It worked out pretty good. Worked out pretty good. In fact, Allstate actually paid for everything.
They were beautiful.
Really good. They were excellent. I don't mean to plug Allstate.
That's fine.
But they covered everything. They were like big. I think it was because we were so far away from home.
As an independent contractor, before we continue, as owning your own business and pushing out and doing this, having the insurance in place for these things is kind of key and essential. But you're talking, you only had the insurance on the vehicle, not on the gear in your possessions as well, right?
That's right.
It was just vehicular insurance, auto. Collision liability, etc.
That's right. That's right.
So you're still running a risk. You're flying blind with your own gear in a way, though.
Well, the gear was covered. On a separate policy. They had nothing to do with the car.
So you did have that covered. That was part of your plan.
Yeah, but it wasn't necessary. In fact, all of that is more for like if somebody robs you blind.
I
don't even know if it would be covered if the car went upside down. That's a good question, actually.
You know? And then when you're talking about some of the contract negotiations that led you to this point of leaving, in hindsight, would you tackle those negotiations a little bit better instead of the guys saying, hey, you could pioneer this? You'll be the first man in this bar. Would you hash that out a little bit better? Or did you have a, you know how some artists have it? You push into a city. My room has to be 77 degrees. Only green M&Ms can be in the jar.
Did you have a list
like this?
Not
or
quite
no?
like that. I'm not a very demanding person, but it has to be... You know, the word accommodation, that's the word that I got hung up on with this contract. In fact, that's what I was yelling about.
That's like, what you were worried about from the jump.
Well, they're like, well, we gave you a place to stay. And I'm like, yeah, but it doesn't say in the contract a place to stay. It says accommodations. These are not accommodations. This is bullshit. You know, this,
yeah.
You know, would you stay here? Well, when I was younger, that's where that shit came from.
Oh, well, great. I'll stay at your place.
Yeah, right.
You
right.
stay there.
Yeah. But no, yeah. And you learn, you know, to ask more questions along the way. But
you can't learn that in school, though.
No, you don't.
I mean, you can learn negotiation tactics. You can learn things about contracts, et cetera. But until you're in that situation, you paid those hard dues.
Right.
What do you know? What do you know?
That's exactly right. You know, in fact, even if you put in the, brown M&Ms, you know, you can almost kind of like understand why they do that stuff, you know, because they get fucked over so much. So like by the time, you know, they hit the big time and stuff, they're like, they want to get back a little bit. You know what I mean? Because you really get fucked, you know, long way to the top if you want to rock, you know, AC/DC, you know, you listen to that song. There's some shit in there, you know?
Yeah.
And it's all true, you know? Everybody's like, oh, they're a bunch of kids, you know? We can dick around with them. We're not even going to fucking pay them, you know?
Yeah, he's a 30-something-year-old dude traveling the world. He's an international rock star based out of Seattle at this point. Like, come on.
I think it was only in my 20s at this point, but anyway.
You were in your 20s in the 80s. We're into the 90s now.
Yeah, that's true. It was in the 90s. It was like, but anyway, so we got out of that town, you know, with a busted-up car. We just got a drivable. We didn't, like, fix the whole thing. So we just got a drivable, and then we drove it down to...
We had to get back to Seattle.
Yeah, we did the gig, and we got to down to Seattle. I think we did one more gig in Oregon on the way, because Oregon's nice. I don't know if you've ever been out there, but it's...
No, I haven't yet. The Northwest has evaded me. I still need to get up there.
It's really cool. There's a lot of, like... surprises in the upper northwest corner of the country.
Are you talking about Bigfoot?
Well, we looked, you know.
I hear there's one surefire way to find them.
What's that?
Have your co-driver lean out the window. Hey, Bigfooty, Footy Foot!
I think, you know, I don't think we tried that one.
That doesn't work. Might work.
It might have worked.
Might have worked.
Might have worked.
Try it next time.
Son of a bitch. You know, all that fucking time I wasted.
All right, so back to Seattle. We're in the 90s. What are you doing, man? It's the grunge scene. Time for some Starbucks and some emo music, right?
You know, I'm glad you mentioned Starbucks because I fell in love with the latte.
Are you kidding me?
In the early 90s, so much that me and this girl, we bought like a little coffee cart.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And we brought it back to Buffalo and we tried to like sell lattes in... what mall was it? Rainbow Mall. It's a big outlet mall in Niagara Falls. And we had a DBA. We had the company.
I remember the latte cart. I remember that.
Yeah,
it was an elementary school field trip.
Uh-huh.
No, I'm kidding.
So anyway, so we got like the lattes, you know, this is 1999. I think it was 92 at the time.
Okay.
And we got the menu, the lattes. I was in Seattle learning how to make these fucking things.
Yeah,
you
this
know?
Guy's straight from Seattle to Niagara Falls.
Let's do this. Nobody had a clue what the fuck a latte was.
No.
They're like, what is a latte? I was going, all right, this is just, maybe you're not ready for this shit.
I get a late. What's a late?
Yeah. So, yeah, it didn't catch on right at that point. But we were a little ahead of our time, you know.
A business that spurred a business that spurred another business.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
We had some cash. We wanted, like, you know, we thought we could start the coffee you know, industry in the East Coast.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but Starbucks stepped in at the right time.
Could have been John Bucks.
Could have been John Bucks. Could have been John Bucks.
It's got a ring to it.
Should
really
have been.
Does.
Somewhere.
Star Johns.
Yeah. I like it. Star Johns. No, I don't like it.
No, it sounds a little weird.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know.
Personal ad.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So you gave up.
I gave everything
you
up.
You quit.
I quit.
Did you?
No, I kept playing.
There were a few more cruises after that, a couple more journeys around the globe. Like, you've gone to Madagascar, to Egypt, to the Antarctic, to, I mean, you've seen the world.
Some of it. I've seen some of it. But the only...
From ports of entry.
The only European stuff was like one of the carnival ships I did by myself, actually. It was my first solo act, as a matter of fact. They were like in a bind. And they were like, John, we know you never did this before, but we really fucking need somebody. Because some guy on this ship went nuts.
Come on.
The normal, like, solo act.
Yeah.
It was a brand new ship. Usually what happens is they build these in Helsinki.
Okay.
Yeah. And then when they take them out, they have, like, a crossing and... Or like a test cruise. It's not the crossing yet. It's like a test cruise with just the crew on board, right? And this guy, for some reason, went nuts, and he started, like, breaking the door on his cabin and stuff. Brand new fucking ship.
Wow.
So the captain immediately fired him. He's like, you're gone. So, but then they had all of, like, the carnival, the CEO, of the biggest people in the company, they all come out to take the inaugural cruise of the new ships.
That's pretty cool.
So they're all coming out in like 2 days.
And this guy's freaking out.
Yeah, this guy's like, John, I know you've never done your solo act before, but you're just going to come here. You don't even have to play loud. I don't care if you play the same fucking five songs all over again. I just need somebody up there
to do
this. You're
trusted. You're reliable. You've seen the world.
So I'm like, all right, I'll do it, you know. So that was my European. I flew to England, and then we went to the ship went to Scotland, Ireland, Russia. I spent a night in St. Petersburg.
That had to have been scary.
It was scary.
Yeah,
but I was a little too stupid. I didn't realize what I was doing. I was lucky, but
they're still following you.
Yeah, they probably are. You're listening now, aren't you? But anyway. And then that was cool. Then you take the European cruise, but the ship wasn't going to be a European ship, so they just put like one European cruise together.
Okay.
And then it goes from
just one test pump down back.
Yeah, yeah. Like it goes the cruise went from like Scotland, Ireland, then Iceland, and then to Canada, like Newfoundland or whatever, and then down to New York City. And then once it's in New York City, I mean, they don't want to waste the trip, so they sell a cross Atlantic crossing cruise, you know. So then it got to New York City, and then I'm not sure what its final port was, but then it does its normal runs back and forth. But I got off of New York City and then went to another ship after that. And that's what launched the solo thing.
How long did that go for?
I could have done it forever, but I
do they still call you?
No, but my current job, they do like extensively look into your background,
right?
And then I looked into what the background investigation was, and they contacted Carnival and asked them if he's still hireable, and they said yes. So.
Oh, that's really nice to know, actually.
Yeah, it is.
So hey,
especially now.
Yeah. No, I'll never forget on one of my more recent jobs. They had to do one of those background check things, and I felt I left on good terms with someone. And come to find out, they shared the report with me, and the person shit-talked me pretty severely, and there was a real bad write-up.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Did you get the name and everything?
Really not cool, man. Yeah. Really not cool. And a lot of it was driven by personal emotion. Yeah, I know exactly who it is. I don't harbor ill will, but looking back, when you try to do nothing but good deeds, and really take care of the people next to you, and you've got personal things going on in your life that head you down a different path,
right?
And then people take that negative stance on that, and then they blacklist you and jab you and make sure, I'm going to make sure you don't get hired anywhere. Oh, really, are you? I dare you. Well, yeah, there they went, giving it a try.
No kidding.
Yeah, and then it continues to follow. I wish nothing but the best to that guy. I do. Yeah. No, really. No harm, no foul, but it's good to know that now everyone knows, you know, and that's going to follow you. It's going to follow you.
Well, one of my favorite entertainers, Frank Sinatra, said the best revenge is massive success. That's the best way to get back at people like that. You just go your way and you just show them that you're better than them, and things happen for you.
So you wound up shutting down your businesses. You closed your businesses. You rooted yourself back into a community. I don't want to go to a bad spot, but your parents were getting older.
Yeah,
you spent more time with them. You were focused on core family, still play locally.
A little bit. Not as much as I should.
But, right.
I still keep up on the technology, which is really good these days. I mean, you don't even need outboard synthesizers. You can do everything and right in the computer. It's amazing, really, you know.
And what about the old business partners? Did you have to buy each other out at that point? What happened to the latte cart? Like, what transpired with the van? Like, how did you wrap things up? Or was it all just taken in the middle of the night?
the latte cart, it's funny because what happened was I was on the ship and I met somebody and I got married and then we wanted to have kids. So, and I wanted to see what they look like. So I decided that I have to stay home. I can't go out and do this crap anymore, you know. So when I got home, we moved in with my mother because she was really sick. So when I got home, the latte cart was in the garage.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So then a couple of years later, the person that I bought it with tracked me down and asked me if she could buy it.
Oh, nice.
Or it was actually her sister, but I knew what was going on.
Right.
So I gave him a cheap price. Said, yeah, get the fucking thing out of the garage.
I was going to say, you still have the latte card.
No, her husband came over, who was pretty cool. You know, I always liked him. And we shoved it up in his pickup truck, put the gate up, and sent him on his way.
And on it goes.
Yeah.
Not a lot of paperwork. Not a lot of things. No, a lot of handshake agreements over the span of time. Spanning what? 20, 30 years on a run? You know, some of the same core people. A lot of changes, money made, money lost, life experiences. Looking back, if you could lend any credible advisement to anyone that ever hears this, that's looking to branch out on their own, that's looking to branch out and take that risk and do something for themselves, what would you tell them to consider?
Just do it. Don't think about it. Just do it and do what you really want to do, and don't hesitate. And it wouldn't hurt you to invest a little money into your retirement, because if I would have put some of that money away instead of blowing it on shit, you know, I'd be sitting pretty good, you know.
But yeah.
I blew it all.
That's the life of a rock star, man.
Yeah. I blew it all, man. You know, it's like,
it happens.
Yeah,
it happens.
Yeah,
so like, there's no regrets, right?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. Well, there was a couple, but
no, I got you.
You know, but yeah, no, it was a lot of fun, but you know.
And what about for any entrepreneur out there that just needs that little extra piece of encouragement or advice, looking at the long span of time?
Well, I don't know. It all depends on you know, on what you want to do. You know, just stick with it. You know, if you have a job, if you create a job, that's great. And if you have a job that you really like doing, I mean, it's not work. You know, it's like, just think of what you do every day. All right, what do you do every day? If you can get paid to do that, you know. Like if you find yourself like messing around with the computer, making music in your spare time,
yeah,
turn it into make some money. You know, push yourself to do it. You can do it. You know,
right.
Especially with mixing these days. I mean, nobody goes to a fucking studio anymore. Who goes to a studio? I mean, you know what I mean.
Trust me, no one. Have one. One comes by.
No, but you know, when I mean studio, I mean like a studio with a tape recorder that's the size of a refrigerator,
right?
That they paid $350,000 for, and they have to maintain it every week with a little screwdriver this big, you know. And they got to call in an expert to turn it, you know. I mean, those days are all gone.
Long gone.
Yeah. And these days you could really learn a lot and do a lot with what you got, you know. And I don't know where I'm going with this, but.
No, it's okay.
You know.
It's okay.
You can just push yourself to do it and do it. You know, you don't. It's music's good. Music's a good business. Even DJing or mixing, or you were telling me about guys that are like just creating stuff and making a living out of it, posting it, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of guys doing that stuff now.
Yeah.
There's so many issues with rights, digital rights, and copy and rebroadcast, et cetera, and a lot of changes on some of the international laws in regards to that. It's going to be interesting to see what happens online in the coming years with YouTube, et cetera, and seeing how that breaks down.
Now these people that are doing this, they're doing it full time probably, right?
A lot of them, yeah.
See, now you gotta take that into consideration. Like a guy like me, for the last 10 years, I started a family, and I felt like I had to do my music in my spare time, you know,
right?
Like I wasn't willing to like just shoot the moon, you know, and do this full time and try to make money, because I thought I needed an income from my family, you know, a steady income that
stability
I could depend on, you
right
know. But you know, it's not all it's cracked up to be. Maybe you should just, you know, put your nose to the grindstone and just fill your life with this thing.
When you cash in and reconcile, and you mentally get to that point where it's like, okay, I'm just going to do the daily grind. I'm going to be that guy that I wrote songs about. I'm going to be that guy heading into the office. I'm doing the same thing. Does that change you?
Yeah, absolutely. For one thing, you're not doing what you like to do, you know, and that in of itself changes you, because you're always going to be thinking you should be doing something else.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you carry that around with you everywhere. So especially if you go out and see somebody else doing it, it's like, I should be fucking doing that, not this.
I'll never forget reaching a point on stage in front of a live crowd, singing, performing, and hitting that pinnacle, in my mind, the pinnacle, to where in the midst of a performance, the vocals are spot on, the music's spot on, the physical movements, the show, everything is running like a top. And the words are coming out of my mouth crystal clear, but my mind is thinking about 1,700 other different things.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's all just that second nature.
Right.
And it just flows.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you reached that Zen point.
You
to
did.
Where you're in a good spot.
You get in the in this zone where, like, and that's the other side of your brain there's a side of your brain that just when you tap it the right way, it's like an automatic thing. You're not thinking. It's like it's just
you're doing
going. Yeah. And it's kind of like, you know, when you're driving and, you know, a tune comes on and you're tapping your hand on something, you're not even aware that you're doing that. Well, how is that happening? You know, and you're probably doing it in time.
And you're doing something non-functional that doesn't benefit anything.
Yeah, but...
So channel that. Turn it into something that benefits something.
Right, you know? I mean, but I know what you're talking about. I mean, you get in that zone and everything is just working so well and you don't even have to think about what you're doing. In fact, your mind is working so well, you can start thinking about other things.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? You're just gone.
In fact,
go ahead. No.
I was going to say, in fact, sometimes when you realize that that's happening, you start thinking about it, and then you fuck it up.
Exactly. Exactly. I was just about to say the same.
Yeah, that's what happened. It's like, holy shit, I'm singing, and I'm not even thinking about this, and all of a sudden you fuck it up.
I can't forget sending you a text message earlier this week where I was in my vehicle, and I was sitting right in front of my work. And I'm staring at the building, and I'm thinking to myself of all these other thoughts, like, I know the second that I go in there, I'm going to do X, Y, Z. All these things are just going to roll. It's almost like feeling like Neo in The Matrix, like you're seeing the whole thing by numbers at that point. You know exactly what's going to transpire and happen, and by 12 o'clock, all your predictions are 100% accurate and correct.
Right.
And you're doing it because you have to. You're doing it because you want to in that moment, because you need to make the money to keep the lifestyle going.
Right.
But your heart may not be totally into everything that you're doing. So you grab onto the shades of what you can find, those shards of what are important to you, and then you try to take that something that's mundane and make it into something that is fantastic. Yeah. And in that moment, you feel good for your day, but you're still doing that same repetitious widget-making thing over and over, while the creativity in your mind, it doesn't go dormant, it doesn't slip away, but it's almost like it fights to get out a little bit more.
Right? Yeah, but I know it's well said, and just if I could elaborate that on a little more, you know, like when you get to that point and you do start looking for that shard, that thing that's going to tip the balance a little bit more to a little more special day than a mundane day, you know?
Yeah.
It's usually something that you think you discovered that's going to benefit your job and the whole process, and everybody's going to be like, wow, it's amazing. We should do that. It's going to save us so much trouble, you know?
Yes, yes,
yes. And you're like, yes, this is great.
We did this. We're about to do this. Yeah. It's going somewhere.
And then so you march into that office and you show it to your supervisor, and they're like, wow, that's fantastic. I'm going to send this up. And then you don't hear anything for the rest of your life.
And nothing changes.
Yeah. And then a few years later, maybe somebody else will come up with the same idea.
Yeah.
And it's theirs. Get promoted.
Yeah.
Look, to that position that you always wanted, that you're never going to have.
Never. Not for you.
Yeah, and then you wonder, you know, did they steal that? Nah. Couldn't have been.
Yeah, right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are nearing that hour mark. We are going to draw things to a close on this special edition of HR Talk, featuring the legendary, world-renowned guitarist Johnny Mazur, who didn't realize he was going to be
the
special guest on HR Talk.
No. But, and if there are any ladies listening, well, you know.
No. What do you mean?
Well, you know, never mind.
Well said, my friend. Thank you so much for coming down. Thank you so much for being you. Thank you so much for taking the time and sharing the stories that you have thus far.
Thanks for tricking me into doing this.
I know. It's the least I do. And with that, Ricky, back to you.
Hey. So, you know, I keep hearing about people being just traveling the world and just playing their instruments anywhere they go and being hired. And I didn't know how you can actually book a show. So there was a book, right? So is that why they call it to book a show? Because there's this book? Is that where that come from?
Well, they actually might use the internet nowadays.
I know, but that's pretty awesome, though. I mean, it's just that it's you go around and you find these agents, and that was... You know, it's one of those stories that you really have to be passionate about what your art is for you to just live off a van and then sell the van and get the van and just do all these things traveling everywhere. So that was awesome. That was awesome.
I like to hearken his story directly to when we're talking about the HR space here, and we think about those that are branching off, that are branching away from their day jobs and creating their own path. Mm-hmm. And you think about becoming that independent consultant or something within HR or leadership and management. Think back to this show. Think back to that guy, Johnny, on the guitar. And just think back to the amount of time that you're going to spend in a van yourself. That's all.
Down by the river. That's right.
Hey, go ahead, Rick. Sorry.
Well, no, I was just going to say that it's to go out and venture on your own like that, the way he did it, and how millions of people do. It takes guts. It really takes guts. It's really just go out not knowing where you're going to get your next paycheck from, but you just believe in your craft enough to know that something is going to work out. So it's for those of you listening that really want to step out into that uncomfortable world of entrepreneurship, this is it. Like exactly how you said, JC, come back to the show, listen to these stories, and we're going to have a lot more introspective series made up of series. We are going to do that.
The HR Talk special, the HR Talk introspective series within a series made up of
a series.
That's right. Well, with that being said, Rick, what are some of the best ways that people could find us, please?
Oh, man, we used to be in a book, but since 2019, we have email. So it's HRTalk@Biesco, or you can go ahead and email us. You can text us. You can call us, 407-501-8425. We're on Instagram. We are on Facebook, HR Talk Podcast. But if you go on Twitter, we're backwards. We're Podcast HR. So you can find us there.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm JC. On behalf of Ricky and Johnny, thanks for visiting and listening and being with us for the first part of the HR Talk introspective series within a series made up of a series. Drive safe. Have a good night.